Morning, Chairperson. I'm Prasanth Mohan, Chief Director of Roads, Department of Transport. We have a team here that's here to listen to the presentation on this matter.
Where is your boss?
They are meeting the minister this morning. We have a new minister. There's some briefings that are...
He's not new. He's 2 weeks in the office. He's not new.
Okay.
And he's never been new. He's been there in circulation.
I think earlier on you did acknowledge he's always visible. Yeah. Just today it was one of those days.
Today was one of those days. Yeah. I will understand. Yeah, today is one of those days. Introduce your team and then Honorable De Freitas will be able to make a presentation.
Okay, thanks. We'll ask everyone to introduce himself.
Morning, Chair. Tabiso Malasa from SANRAL, Head of Strategy.
Morning, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. Johannes Machat is my name, SANRAL's Legal and Compliance Officer.
Where is your CEO? Is he still tired from SCOPA?
He has other engagements that he's attending to, the Chairperson.
Morning, Chairperson, and morning, Honorable Members. My name is Waitima Pakela from the Department of Transport, Acting Chief Director, Road Regulation.
That's why we have to go to the
My name is Chairperson. I'm with the NLTA team and also private members, BL team.
Thank you very much. You didn't say your name. You know, I will translate Simpatlen into English.
It's Mulugo Matag.
Okay, Mulugo. Okay. Come to where the others are. What about the one that you take? Honorable De Freitas, the team have introduced themselves. They know honorable members here. You need no introduction. I will request you to brief the team, and then we'll be able to take it from there.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to start off by apologizing and feeling very embarrassed. Somewhere during this process, there was a mix-up, and I suspect it was my office, where the incorrect bill has been tabled today, or the incorrect version has been tabled today. And in this version that's before us, it has includes and talks about a section that talks about a referendum, which was taken out during the process. So I apologize for that. I've spoken to our legal advisor, and the gazetted version had that piece out. So somewhere there's a gremlin, so I do apologize. I'm very embarrassed about that. That section is not in there. So just to start off is to say that in the State of the Province address in Gauteng, Premier Makura expressed concern about e-tolls. And according to his speech, and in fact I see that in Advocate Nell's notes, she included coverage on that speech, where the Premier said he would be approaching the President about looking at a new model for e-tolls. And it's very interesting, I don't know how many Gautengers there are, not many Gautengers in the room, how e-tolls has united communities of all races, of all socioeconomic strata and so forth, against e-tolls. So I'm not here to talk for it or against it. I want to make sure that the mistakes that happened in the past, which were inadvertent mistakes, I don't believe SANRAL went and did those actions on purpose, that they are not repeated. So what my private members bill seeks to do is to make sure there are two arms to it. The first is to make sure there's proper consultation with the relevant premier of the province concerned, and also there's proper consultation with the mayor of the affected cities or local authorities concerned. So any future toll roads, those levels of government, those people would be consulted, because that was one of the big drawbacks. And in that, there'd be buy-in, if you like, or there'd be discussion on whether a particular toll is issued or not. The second leg to my proposed bill, is that we ensure that wherever a e-toll road is constructed, that another road, alternative road, be in existence. So it doesn't necessarily have to be in a fantastic state that e-tolls are in, but certainly it then ensures that the public has an option to take another road. They would, for example, hypothetically know that it would take them a lot longer to reach their destination, but then they would have an option to take that. Because that was the other big outcry that came out from communities. They're saying in many instances they simply had no option but to use that road, and financially it was very difficult for them to do that. So that's what this bill suggests, is that any future e-tolled roads will ensure that there's an alternative. And obviously the community or the driver, the motorist, would know in advance that the road would be maybe more congested. It wouldn't be as straightforward. In other words, it may be a longer route and so forth. But certainly there'd be an adequate road that is well maintained and looked after. And then also just another piece that I've added on is, and that was something that also came out in public participation processes in Gauteng, in the existing e-tolls project, was that an environmental impact also be included in there, and I've put it in there. So it does talk about socioeconomic and so forth, but also an environmental, because there were communities who felt that the construction of these roads, the widening, the taking over the verges and so forth, impacted environmentally. That's really the gist of the private members' bill, Chair. During the process, there was the suggestion for a referendum is taken off, and I don't want to get into that because that's actually not on the table as well. So that's the gist of what this bill is. It's trying to make sure that communities in the future, and certainly SANRAL is not put in a difficult position that it was put in the past, in where it became very difficult. I know at the time when the Gauteng Freeway project was happening and public participation was taking place, possibly some of the officials here may have been in those public meetings. They were very difficult meetings, and the public felt they weren't consulted enough. Well, certainly the perception was there, and my private members bill, Chair, seeks to ensure that communities are consulted, the premier is consulted, the mayors concerned are consulted, and in that way it would be more acceptable perhaps for a road to be tolled. Because international experience has shown us that even very expensive roads, Singapore is an example, that are tolled, if there is a public participation process, and the community is consulted and they're taken on board, they actually accept these roads, they accept the proposed e-toll. And, you know, there are various examples worldwide where, despite it being expensive, they still, accepted the road. I'm not saying that that's the case here, but certainly it would create an opportunity for more consultation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable De Freitas. Any taker from honorable members, honorable Mpanza, honorable Ramatlakana, honorable Shibande, honorable Msina?
Yeah, no thanks, Chairperson. I think we welcome the presentation from our colleague. but Chair, I think the fundamental questions that we should ask, do we really need e-tolls altogether? What's wrong with the current system of toll gates? because I can say, Chair, from my position wearing another cap, the view in our consultation with the broader community, actually they are not in favor of the ETOL system altogether. They are saying that why if it's not broken, why do you fix it? Because this ETOL system has been there for a long, long time, and it's been working. But all, of course, and we see what has happened with the ETOLs. They've actually cost the country a lot of money. People are completely defying it. Even if there have been some legal threats and everything, people say we are prepared to go to jail, not going to pay. The system is expensive. We appreciate the infrastructure that has been put, but it's very expensive. It's an elite kind of a system. So I think that's the fundamental thing that we must also look. Even if with coming with saying let's have the ETOs and then have alternatives to that one. So the issue of the alternatives, I think it's supported by everyone. Then communities have that there must be. And I think with the current system, you do have ETOs. But the only challenge that the majority of committee members is that the alternative roads are not actually looked after, in the manner in which the toll gate roads are looked after. They're neglected. There are a lot of potholes, the poor standards. So that they are saying that have the alternatives, but also improve the nature and the infrastructure at that site. Cheche, also, what we should also look at, the environmental implications, I think, are well accepted. We should look at that one. The job losses. What are the implications if we completely scrap the ETOLs? Because there are people that are working there. What is the system? What is the mechanism of making sure that if you do away with the ETOLs, then these people somehow are absorbed, in the system, maybe of the ETOLs, or some mechanism are created to look at that. So I think for me that would be the input, that first of all, as a committee, let's then ask that fundamental question and address it. Do we really need ETOLs, or do we want to carry on with the toll gates and then improve the alternative roads and all those things? And then we can take the debate forward. But I welcome the innovative ideas that the colleague is coming up with. And I think it's a process that we can engage further in the committee. Thanks very much, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and the colleague's presentation. It looks like the amendment that you seek to effect is on Section 27. You're only dealing with Section 27 in terms of the Act, but. The question that I have, which is troubling me, on 2.3, I know you did say that the referendum within 6 months or 6 weeks has been taken out of what has been published. But at the moment, in front of us, we are sitting with the incorrect document. the simple logic for me suggests that we can't deal with it. We've got the wrong document before us. We can't apply our mind to an incorrect document, therefore. So I don't know what will be the procedure of going back from here. But I think we should, and I'm all for engagement, but I'm mindful that it has been said that this document is a wrong version, and therefore we can't engage with the wrong version of the bill. Let's get the right one for us to be able to engage with it. This is what stands here. The referendum must be called within 6 weeks so that the interested person in the province may vote. So I think, Chair, for me, I just think that we should suspend these talks until we have a proper document for us to consider.
Honorable Ramatlakana, let me indicate that this was the document which was tabled to Parliament. Probably, as Honorable De Freitas indicates, that there are some faults in the document. I don't know procedurally what are the what can procedurally probably he may need to withdraw and submit the proper document, because this is the document which was submitted to Parliament, so that we are able to deal with it in a proper manner. Honorable De Freitas, before you, Honorable Sibande, issues that have been raised, probably we need to address them.
Thanks, Chair. Just to answer the last point, and I'm looking at our legal advisor, because I'm very embarrassed about this. So this is the incorrect document, but the gazetted version, dated the 15th of December 2016, is the correct version. So the gazetted version for public comment was the correct version. So somewhere the glitch happened, where Parliament has got one version and the gazette is another version. If I could just take the opportunity of just responding to the two colleagues. Let me just make it clear, from my perspective, personally, is I'm against e-tolls. It's an added tax, and it has caused a lot of financial and other burdens to Gautengers at the moment. If it expands to other provinces, it would be other provinces. But the point is that unless this committee formally asks for this e-tolls to be reconsidered and to scrap e-tolls, if that's what I understand the members are saying, I would support that. And then my private member's bill wouldn't be required. I'm just working within the confines of what we have at the moment to try and get a best option that there is. So certainly, if the member is proposing that we completely suggest that we scrap e-tolls, I would be supporting that 100%, but I wouldn't understand or don't know what the process is to do that. I don't know if we're entitled or allowed to do that as a portfolio committee. I would imagine it would be the minister that would have to be required to do that. So I agree with the colleague. If we can do that, that's even better. Then we don't need my private member's bill. And then number two is the incorrect document. I think I've covered. Thank you. But I'd be interested to hear from the legal advisor, Chair. Thank you.
Lolitando. Sorry. I thought you were Lolitando. Ms. Sibande.
Chairperson.
Sorry.
Okay, fine. I thought that maybe if it will be very strategic, maybe if the state law advisor come after us to make a summary. But nevertheless, let me do this. Chairperson, I think, like my colleague have already indicated, that maybe if you can get the correct document and then so that we can discuss with it. But to also to encourage our colleagues that it's, you know, the steps which they've done is correct, that if we are having whatever challenge, they must bring it to the portfolio committee. But at the same time, I wanted to remind my colleagues about some of the processes which led to it all. Because some of the people, they thought that the it all maybe is from heaven. It didn't via, from our side, it didn't via from the portfolio committee. The background of it all, it started long ago before even ourselves come to Parliament, whereby they were launching the program of RDP, where all 9 provinces were brought together in terms of proposals on how to develop their own provinces. And I'm subject for correction. Western Cape was part of the proponents of it all. Proponents of it all by then. But the different was implementation. They're the ones who proposed, but in terms of implementation, they never implemented anything. Then here comes us and other, as the times goes on. You see, what we ought to think at our back of our mind about the financial implication, whether does it have any financial implication about this matter? Because a lot of billions on billions have been requested from other sides. And as I indicated, you see, you can bring whatever system. As long as we don't have a proper monitoring system, we'll have a crisis. And then as long as we don't implement, we'll be having crisis. Because once the thing is proposed, if somebody is not implementing it, at the end, other people will criticize as if that particular thing has failed. I'll make an example. A few days ago in our gadgets, there was an incident which was roaming around about the car cloning, you know, these cloning things, cloning things. The car, there are people who are having this cloning system while the car is on the road towards the e-toll. The number plate switches off. Once you pass, you switch it on. That is the highest criminal international in terms of international norms and standard. So our question is what do we do? Because if you keep quiet, what stops those particular people who are doing these things in terms of robbing and haste and the like? Towards the haste, you switch off your number plates. After the haste, you open your number plate. What stops you to do that? Coming back to this thing, myself, I don't have any problem, but you must check the background of it, where it started, how is it started, and whether do we have any financial implication? Because if any premier or any person proposes something else, I think also proper consultation must be done. Because this thing involves a lot of people, involves a lot of things. Like the argument which was brought by my colleagues now, for an example. There is an argument about an alternative route that route is in terms of the maintenance. Where is the money? Because some people we talk as if there's money really there. Because lastly, Chairperson, the thing which made us to argue so much with other people, they wanted to raise the issue of the fuel. We argued the issue of the fuel levy that no, this is too much because the RAF, Road Accident Fund, depend on fuel. And then also once you touch the fuel, what about other provinces? Like I'm from Mpumalanga. The most expensive toll gate, not e-toll, toll gate is Mpumalanga. If you start from Ngomazi to Pretoria, you must have plus minus 500 rands every 10 in terms of toll gates. What about this side? I'll put an example. You scrap the e-toll in the elite places, but you leave the toll gates somewhere somehow. And then it means that if you implement the issue of the fuel levy, that means that you are double charged. Because it's the toll gate plus the levy. Paying for who? Paying for the people who are staying there in the suburbs. I've got a lot of argument which I can bring the time when the time allows. But we were just suggesting that to our colleague, the route is taken, is correct, that we debate this matter, but left in the certain time where a proper document is brought and then we discuss about it, avoiding the interpretation when we go outside, because some of the people, they can take it either to the media or social media to say already 1, 2, 3 while we didn't agree with that particular thing. I think proper consultation must be done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Norikando.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to come in on the issue of around document being in front of the committee. Chair, the bill that is in front of the committee was the bill that was, as you were saying, that was introduced to Parliament and that was certified by our office. The difference between the bill that was published and this bill is paragraph E on page 3. In the published bill, there was no paragraph E, because the member has said that after consultations, they decided to take that part out. Chair, it won't be a transmesh if the committee deals with this current bill, because the committee must still pass a motion of desirability on the bill and all those kind of things. So the committee, if the committee has decided that the bill is desirable, then the committee can just do an A list and amend the bill and remove that part. So because if the member now withdraws the bill, then the member would have to publish the bill again and the whole process has to start all over again. So the best thing, my advice to the committee would be the committee to deal with this bill, and once they pass a motion of desirability, then the committee, we can amend the bill as introduced to the A list. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable De Freitas, I think that's fair. Honourable De Freitas. Oh, sorry, Honourable Musinga.
Thank you, Chair. Tongue-in-the-cheek advocate, I think to refer to this as not being a train smash is rather ironic. Chair, you know, whether this is a pro or anti-e-toll or pro or anti-toll gates, I think is irrelevant. Fact is, we need funding for road maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's financed through fuel levy or a hybrid system where you have a combination of different finance, that's not on the table. What we have on the table is something very specific, something which I believe would be advancing the current situation, certainly reflecting on what we could learn out of processes that we painfully still have to deal with. And that in particular talks to the manner and principles, criteria, framework of public participation, which I believe for the first time touches on the very important recognition of all three spheres of government. We have a proposal here which says that we should recognize the important local municipal spheres of government, whether it's a district municipality, whether it is a local municipality, and in what province it is. But then in a particular manner, in terms of there should be recognition and input from the leadership, whether it's a premier or whether it's a mayor of that particular sphere of government. Furthermore, it also then suggests that given the fact that you would always have people that would in no way be able to afford even the lowest payment, that there should be alternative roads and that roads must be carefully selected and also maintained. And then in the last component, it says that we should recognize and carefully look at implications of environmental impact, including socio-economic. And in that respect, Chair, I want to emphasize a very important contribution by means of a research document. A research document that was published in the South African Journal of Economics in 2015, where it was stated that the province of Mpumalanga would be severely affected by the e-tolls in Gauteng. So if an adjacent province is severely affected by a costing structure on transport in an adjacent province, certainly our minds then expand as to how wide this participation process is suggested to be undertaken, instead of just thinking it's here, so therefore we only consult with the people around. Because, Chair, in that research document it was found that due to the mining activities and the increased cost on transport for mines in Mpumalanga having to drive through the e-toll sections in Gauteng, it would decrease the GDP as much as 17% in the mining sector of Mpumalanga mines. Now suddenly we get a new perspective as to implications around the decision taken in one province, not recognizing implications in adjacent provinces. So therefore, this bill certainly then confronts us with a new thinking framework and new particulars that should be part of consideration going into a future form of funding for road maintenance. Whether it's e-tolls, whether it's toll gates, it's about public participation, the careful consideration of who we should include due to the experience that we have, where I think this research paper really contributes a lot. Thank you, Chair.
Probably members would want to know the South African Journal of Economics 2015, does it have a month?
I'm quite happy to forward it to the secretary, then we
can
distribute it.
Before Honorable Ramatakan, I thought we would want to hear from the department and Sandra after Advocate Nolutando has indicated that probably what we need to do is to remove subsection E, which is talking to the referendum and the referendum outcomes, and then we're able to deal with the whole bill as it is, with the exclusion of that part. Let me hear from Sanral and the department. Mutsati. I've forgotten your surname, sir. Mahon. Okay. Mr. Mahon.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, for the presentation and providing clarity on which version of the document that is actually being tabled. I also heard in the presentation here that if clarity is provided on e-tolls, that this bill is going to be withdrawn. But then I think we need to understand that prior to the implementation of e-tolls, that was a cabinet decision that was taken. So anything to do with e-tolls has to go back to cabinet to get further directives on that. So it's not a decision we can give answers on. But if that's the route that the committee wants us to pursue, we will definitely advise our principal that this is a suggestion, and then we'll have to wait to see what cabinet would say on the matter. So then you can decide if you want to still consider and pursue this. But from what I hear is, if decisions are taken in that direction, this won't be necessary. That's my first comment for now, but I would like to hand over to my colleagues of SANRAL to comment.
Who's taking from Sandra? Okay.
If I may, Chair, I'll start. Noting obviously that I won't be able to touch on everything, but I'll touch on what I can, and then I'll pass over to my colleague, Mr. Makgato. Obviously, going forward, we will supply, I think, more detailed comment, but I'll just address those that I've picked up in brief, and then I can supplement if need be, just for the sake of time. In terms of the GFIP, in terms of the consultation, which many feel was inadequate, and I think I'd like to take issue with that, in the fact that SANRAL at the time fully consulted with mayors, premiers. I remember even when I was at the DOT and we were doing the consultation for the GFIP, going with the DG Mpumimpofu, Mr. Alex Van Niekerk, to NEDLAC, going to Ekurhuleni, going to Tshwane. In actual fact, we did a big document in terms of the conceptualization of the GFIP, the fact that it came from Gauteng, it was implemented by SANRAL, and it was consulted widely at all the various levels. And I think we were fully compliant in terms of the requirements of the consultation. Subsequent to that, there were changes by certain personnel, and the history of the consultation then seemed to have been lost and ignored. But then at least I think I can say that we were in full compliance in terms of what needed to be done. If we need to improve the structures in terms of consultation, we've realized that as SANRAL, we've got a new Horizon 2030 document. where we've elevated stakeholder engagement as a pillar to say that we need to do more in terms of what is required in terms of making sure that we bring the people with us in terms of infrastructure delivery, and what more can we do to improve acceptability of the of projects going forward. So that is one thing we have realized. But we did take along premiers, mayors, etc., and all the political authorities to whom we operate, and this was carried through by our department, our shareholder ministry, etc., etc. In terms of alternative roads, I think the delegate from the Portfolio Committee of Transport indicated these are under promises of the municipalities over whom we have no control. Budgets are an issue as well. And if one looks at the South African road network, it's 750,000 kilometers in size. It's the 10th densest road network in the world. We've actually overlaid all the roads that are under a road authority, be it ours, which are 22,000, provinces, which are 240,000, and the municipalities, which have about 250,000. The balance of 150,000 kilometers is unaccounted for and not under a delegated road authority. There are, by nature of the fact that you've got such a dense network, already alternatives in place. We can't account for the condition of those alternatives, but there are alternatives in terms of the road network, which acts as a natural hedge against us, for example, not being able to be excessive in terms of tolls and giving alternatives to our South African commuters, etc., etc. In terms of the environmental, every project we do is in full compliance with NEMA. If there are gaps in NEMA, then those should be taken with DEA, but we were in full compliance with NEMA. We went out in a full consultation process. I remember even one of my colleagues, Busimpati Makwa, actually consulting and having stakeholder engagement sessions where people complained about various issues, some of them whims about wind noise, some of them about the condition of the pavement, etc., etc. But where we can, we take those on board in consultation with DEA, and then who guide us in terms of what mitigates we can put in place and what's fair and what's frivolous, etc., etc. But we are welcome to share with you the results of all those engagements to prove full compliance in terms of the environmental issue in that respect. Now, in terms of the ETOLs issue, as rightly as my colleague Mr. Mohan has indicated, we have put in some scenarios in terms of going forward how to handle the ETOL issue. I think it's been well documented that the non-compliance has been an issue for SANRAL and the fact that it's having on our toll portfolio. We put a proposal forward to the minister. I don't think it's for me to explain in terms of the outcomes and what the impacts would be, but I think the delegate from Mpumalanga has indicated that once you scrap, and which would be a seemingly convenient and solution from the start, it has with it some very, very adverse consequences, both for Treasury, our existing toll plazas, and what it would mean for the country in terms of our ratings. Already and now we are at junk, and the fact that we would not be able to probably borrow more money going forward, and it would affect other entities as well. So we must approach this decision from a very sober and rational point of view, and not just wake up and say, let's grab this thing. I think that this just requires a bit more of homework in that respect. In terms of the job losses, if you scrap e-tolls, there's the job losses aspect, and then there's the bigger issue in terms of what would happen in terms of the defaults, and what would happen in terms of the impacts on the other entities as well, which is a bigger issue, and I think just requires a bit more of a research process on that. In terms of the cost of transport study on Mpumalanga, that would be a very interesting study to look at. I think, though, it ignores some realities, the realities being that the GIFA project came with improved infrastructure, it came with improved travel time savings, it came with reduced congestion, it came with reduced accident costs. At the same time, those costs of transport, when we had the similar approach from ShopRite, who said that their cost of transport are increasing, we wrote back to them in a five-page letter saying that you have options whereby you can use cost of transport and offset against your tax bill, and you can claim back from SARS. And we said to them that you actually also are ignoring the benefits of having an improved infrastructure and the fact that you are at least saving, and it is resulting in improved profitability for ShopRite and others. And that we can also share with you as well in terms of that respect. But let me stop here, and I'll let my colleague, Mr. Makhato, continue as well.
Makhato, be the last. Mutating YT, you want to speak? We'll allow you to do so. It's also enriching our thinking as you do that.
Thanks, Chairperson. May I ask that I know for a fact that this bill has to go out for public comments, that it be published by your committee. would also want to raise input in that regard, and the same would be submitted. But then, be that as it may, mine is from a legal perspective. We, as Sandal, believe that the bill as it is before the committee constitutes interference with the minister's powers, and that it has incorrectly been checked as 76, rather than it should be 75. Right. Our principal act has been tagged as a 75 when it was passed in 98, and for simple reason that national roads fall within the purview of the national sphere of government. Now, it is for that reason that we say that this bill should be tagged as a 75. Further thereto, the proposed amendments 274B sub 3 requires that a majority vote in favor of a proposed toll is required from a provincial legislature. This would, in our view, constitute would be inappropriate because in terms of Schedules 4 and 5 of the Constitution, national roads are not listed in the schedules and fall to be administered by the national sphere of government. Okay. Now, that being said, the proposed amendment will, with due respect, amount to an unwarranted interference in the national functions by the provinces and could result in the planning of national roads as well as national policy on toll roads being frustrated by individual provinces. And then in support, reference is made to the Western Cape High Court case, Democratic Alliance versus the President of South Africa and others. The citation thereof is 18392/13/2014/ZAWCHC 31, 2014 All South African Law Reports, page 569. The specific paragraphs to be referred to there are paragraphs 99 to 103. Okay. Whilst we appreciate the input that there should be consultations, as alluded to by Mr. Malahlela, we have extensively consulted when e-tolling started, and we submit that to submit proposals for toll roads to the provincial legislature will cause major delays in the process, as this may be drawn out over a long period, as the Premier and the provinces are involved in the entire planning and assessment processes. This will amount to duplication of processes, and it will be also time-consuming. The current requirement in Section 24B that provinces must be given an opportunity to comment is considered to be sufficient, because that's what's currently in the legislation. Like I said, Chairperson, we would want to make meaningful input again. This time, obviously, it will be in writing when the committee publishes for comment. So for that, I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the inputs from the honourable members. Probably on our side, the point we probably need to indicate is that one of the considerations that the committee might want to look into, the legacy report of the Portfolio Committee of 2009 and 2014, and how the matter was dealt with in terms of introducing electronic tolling at the time, and also the subsequent work that was done around consultation and also around the work of the IMC at the time. Probably to say, Chair, that I think we take the input around Honourable Ramatlakane on the issue of the wrong document. We will be guided by yourselves about a document that we need to deal with. I suppose this Parliament is meant for continuous engagement with the public, and and if such an opportunity avails, I think we'll be ready to engage and see. Also to indicate just an analysis of some of the inputs that are in the document, demonstrate an evolution of somewhat, if I can define it that way, of the mandate of a of this national entity called SANRAL, which in the name we might want to look into what then becomes of SANRAL. If this input are going to be taken as such, but of course there will be deliberations in the committee, you know, because it really talks to the overall mandate of SANRAL in the main. I think on our side, Chair, those are our inputs for now. Thanks.
Whitey.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I just want to come up with the consultation part, more particularly where a road, a decision has to be made for a road to be tolled. Firstly, there is an impact assessment that is conducted to look at the impact, on the impact of the road to the local people. And in most cases, you find that SANRAL implement the local user discount to ensure that the local users that are using that particular toll gate on a daily basis are relieved from the high cost of the toll. That is point number one. And secondly, it will be on the economic viability of that particular municipality or locality. Because if you look at the Swartruggens, you look at the one in Mpumalanga, if the people around that area they cannot afford the cost of toll, so SANRAL will come up with a measure to ensure that they relieve that. But again, when it comes to the issue of the toll itself, remember my colleague has indicated that this is a national competency. And if a toll has to be implemented, we have to go through the provinces and the municipalities to get that mandate. It will have to be tagged as Section 76 rather than the current Section 75. And when you look at the current Principal Act of SANRAL, Section 27, it talks about the mandate of SANRAL. And if that has to be, as the Honourable Member is proposing, it will mean that some of the mandates, the funding mandate of SANRAL, need to be reviewed and ensure that we reduce some of them. And part of them is to generate, to ensure that they generate revenue and to maintain. And the only source of income that SANRAL can have, except the national revenue, it will be for tolling. And the cross-subsidization of roads is not something that is applicable currently. So SANRAL rely entirely on toll to maintain those toll roads. So I think that is something that we need to really look very, very openly and ensure that the competing needs from government, because it's not only toll roads, there are other competing needs, so that we are able to maintain our national roads. I think that is my input.
Makhatu.
Thanks, Chairperson. Regarding alternative routes, if I may, I would like to take the committee a bit further back and start by saying, in the then National Roads Act 54 of 1971, Section 93A thereof, it provided that the predecessor to SANRAL, the road board, could not declare a national road as a toll unless, in the board's opinion, an alternative road to the internal toll was available. This provision was questioned by government after the 94 election on the basis that a developing country such as South Africa could not afford the luxury of always having to have alternative roads. Section 93A was accordingly repealed in 96, and a compulsory alternative routes were no longer required after that date. When SANRAL Act was drafted, this policy decision was also taken forward in the 1998 SANRAL Act. In terms of our Act, tolls are determined by the Minister, and it is presumed that the Minister, as advised by SANRAL, will take the existence of alternative routes into account and ensure that tolls are reasonable or even implemented where no viable alternative route is available. A case in point here is the R55 route in the Lodium area in Tshwane, Chairperson. Sandal improved that route instead of providing a new alternative route. Okay? If the requirement for alternative route is implemented, it could force government to provide one or more additional routes, leading to duplication of infrastructure provision and wastage of government funds. I pause there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable members, I think there's a lot of work that we should do in-house as honorable members so that we're able to really focus on this act before we can even go to its desirability. Honorable De Freitas?
Thanks, Chair. The representatives from SANRAL started talking about withdrawing of e-tolls and so forth. That's not what the private members' bill is saying. I made it as a throwaway line. In the event that that were to happen, there'd be no reason for my private members' bill. So the very reason why there is a private members' bill is because we have e-tolls at the moment. And I'm trying to seek a way of making the best possible option for the residents of Gauteng. So that's what we're debating. So I don't want to conflate the thing. The second is, Chair, you may remember that at the recent, I think it was the last time we saw Samuel when they came to talk to us about their budget and their annual report, I specifically asked the CEO of Sunrail about e-tolls. Would it be scrapped, essentially, was what I asked. And he said that that question was a political question and had gone to the minister, at the time the previous minister, for a political decision. So I'm I'm presuming that decision, if it's still on the table with Cabinet, they will consider it and make a political decision. And certainly if the political decision were to be that they would just relook at e-tolls and scrap it, then obviously this bill would fall away because there's no requirement for it. But as things stand, I believe there is a requirement for it. It was interesting that one of the, I can't remember which one of the representatives from SANRAL mentioned that there is always an alternative to a road, but yet I see now the legal, because I was going to bring it up, the legal advisor tells us that, quite rightly, in 96, the requirements, until then, the requirements to provide an alternative route was taken out of legislation. Until then, there was always a requirement to ensure that there was an alternative route, which is a problem. And there's talk about, you know, how do we afford it and so forth. We're not, you know, we're in a situation where we have a very difficult economic situation for the person in the street. And they shouldn't have to foot the bill. They're already paying taxes, as it is. And now they've been asked to essentially pay another tax when SANRAL has a budget to do this very job. So that's the argument I have to make. But again, that's also not part of my private members' bill, because it talks specifically about consultation. And all the representatives from SANRAL are saying is that they are doing consultation. But yet, the impression I'm getting is that they don't like my private members' bill. So I don't understand where the conflict is. If the consultation is taking place with premiers and affected mayors, then all my bill would do is just reinforce what they're already doing. So I'm not sure whether there'd be a conflict, where there's interference. I don't see where there's interference. It's happening anyway, according to them. So I'm saying that it would just continue. My other point is that I do believe it's a Section 75 bill because it only talks about public participation. That's what this bill is about. I believe we should get some more legal clarity on that. And I think I've covered all my points. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I know that a legal advisor from Parliament suggested that we could take the subsection E out, and then everything is okay after that. We can do that. But if you look at the long title of the bill, the long title of this bill still refers to the provincial referendum that should be called. Now, of course, I'm sure the legal advisor will say we can also amend that section. and then make it look okay. The point I'm trying to make is that we are considering a wrong document. And my suggestion was not to say completely withdraw. If there is a document that has been published which is a correct document, that's a document that should have been presented at the committee level. So, and that Honorable De Freitas suggests that this one that was circulated is incorrect. There is a correct version that was published. Was there a correct version that was published? And if there is a public a correct version that is public, why is it that document in front of us? I mean, system today, you can get the document while we're sitting here if there is an issue about that. So for me, the question is that we want to take a shortcut and dealing with this question, and I'm not comfortable with it. But I will leave that there. Let me come back to the... I know, Chair, you're in a hurry. I can see your body language there. You're in a hurry for us to get to somewhere. But we can't get to somewhere now. I think this bill has been presented to us. I'm sure we probably would like to think deeply about it. Because if the bill, the amendment, is premised on the assumption that there has not been sufficient consultation, and the opposite is correct, then the bill becomes superfluous. Right? So what I'm trying to say, Chair, is that the pillar of the Permanent Members Bill is that there has not been sufficient consultation. But in terms of Gauteng. But actually, from having served in this committee and having received lots of reports, there were consultations. Now, whether the consultation is a consultation, so consultation is not necessarily agreement, reaching an agreement. It's a process that you consult, you get the views, you work the views in it, but it does not prohibit you in making a decision at the end. In other words, the only thing that if it was set in the bill, that the toll rate henceforth will be in consultation with community would have been a different of this bill. Because then that would mean that it's a co-determination between the state and civil society in terms of making sure that it happens. But that's not where the bill is taking. The bill is assuming that there has not been a sufficient consultation. And therefore, it wants to bolster this consultation through this mechanism. Now, in fact, even when we're dealing with this bill with the Department of Transport, the Minister of Transport, the former, and the whole lot of the President getting, Deputy President getting involved in the process, all of which is that there has been a consultation, but the problem is that the decision after the consultation was contested. Not that there has not been consultation, but the fact that the wrong decision has been made, you shouldn't have been that decision, given that the cost factor and so on and so on. The point I'm making, I can see you are shaking your head there, Honorable. You are, I had to allow you to speak without shaking my head. But anyway, that's okay. Let's get into that. But from where I'm sitting, all the point I'm only making is that if the pillar, the strong pillar of this amendment, is that there has been insufficient consultation, and contrary is true, then the amendment bill is superfluous. It's not improving anything. It's not doing anything that is going to be improving on the issue about the. But if the bill was a prohibitive bill that says henceforth no toll road are going to be allowed, we would find ourselves into difficulty to make such a decision as a committee.
The use of principle in terms of the country is part of this lingo analysis.
If we were to take such a stance, it means we will have to find the time to have a little bit of consultation ourselves, because remember, we're governing. So if we take decision here that has an impact on somewhere else, we would have to clarify that ourselves, that we're not marching into the wrong direction. So, Chair, let me just end up by saying, I don't think we're ready to get into the desirability of the bill at this meeting yet. I think from where I'm sitting, certainly I want to read the document fully, get that research material, look at the SANRA Act as in total, in terms of the mandating of it, and then decide whether there is a desirability of this at the next interval, not today. At today's meeting, it was just a briefing, and we just tease the things that we think we will get back to in the fuller discussion at the later stage. That's all, Chair. I wanted to suggest that I want to rest my case there, but haven't pointed out to the legal advisor that long title there is worrying me as well. So, but let's find a way to take out the technicalities. But if we are going to get to a point, so why be fussy about it? I would say whether the document is clean or not clean, but this is the way it wants to go. Is there going to be improvement? I don't know. In my view, we need to discuss that particular question. But I'm pretty clear in my view, in my mind, as I'm listening to this and I'm reading it as I'm sitting here, as to where we should be going. Thank you, Chair.
Where are we going? Where are we going? Honourable De Freitas.
Chair, this is exactly the argument that Samuel used, and it appears that some of the colleagues have been conned into it. Yes, there was consultation. Let me give you the real facts. In November 2007, when the first round of public consultations went out, only 30 out of a few million residents of Gauteng, only 30 submissions were received. And in the second round of consultations in April 2008, 2 submissions were received. Now, if anybody's telling me that 32 submissions is enough out of a public participation process, I'm not talking about the public meetings, I'm talking about the initial concept of GFIP. You tell me that 32 presentations are good enough, then we simply just don't agree. So yes, there was public participation, but the results didn't produce the goods, because it was done in such a way that people weren't informed. Senator won't, for example, tell you about the advert to announce this public participation process, the size of a postage stamp, published in a newspaper on Christmas Day, for example. So, yes, they followed the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law. And that's my point. So, yes, on paper, yes, there was lots of consultation. But it didn't produce the goods, because you can gerrymander and manipulate the system in such a way that you meet the letter of the law, but not the spirit of what it is intended. And that is the root of my private men's role. I'm quite happy to, Chair, to produce the correct version of this bill and table it at a next opportunity, a very soon opportunity. But I'm not going to be withdrawing the bill. And only I can withdraw it because I'm the author of the bill. So certainly I'm going to be, would like this bill tabled in this House, and I'm proposing that the correct version be tabled at the very next meeting, in other words tomorrow, and that at a very soon opportunity we look at the correct version. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable De Freitas. I think that takes us a step forward where we want to go. We will await the correct version to be tabled into this committee. as was gazetted, and then we'll take it forward. I think we're done in this regard. Where is land transport? Who's here for land transport? Can they come in? I gave them 45 minutes. It's over an hour now. You want to be released? You don't want to listen to your colleagues? Oh, okay, you can move, you can become backbenchers like many of us. We're quite happy. Yeah. Okay. Present and go. I'll release you when I feel like. Yeah. What time is it now? Midday, almost. Thank you very much, honorable members. The team land amendment of the National Land Transport here. Two of the team members who are requesting to be recused from the Department of Transport, and probably three of them will remain to deal with the issues. Advocate Bongiwe, are you ready to present? Have you agreed on the matter which actually had to take you out for an hour and 15 minutes?
Members, the document has been inboxed to you. It should be in your email right now.
Okay. Okay. Can you start? We just need...
Thanks, Chairperson. Indeed, we've met with the department, we discussed it, and what transpired from that discussion was that Uber just like the meter taxi and the mini bus taxis, they are already regulated. That's what transpired. And they are also expected to comply in terms of the act, to apply also for the operating license. So that's currently what is happening. And it's about 50% of the Uber drivers, they have the operating licenses. So that was a misunderstanding, because I was under the impression that Uber is not regulated. This is the first attempt to regulate them. So that one was clarified. Now, what we did, we've amended Clause 3, which is dealing with amendments to Section 8 of the Act. Section 8 of the Act deals with regulations by the minister. It's already covered amendments to Section 8 of the Act, already covered under the bill. In the document that was presented to you by the State Law Advisor, it's on page 2, clause 3, after item 2, there's a new item 3. And it reads as follows. On page 4, after line 33, to insert the following. Paragraph F, by the insertion in subsection 1, after paragraph BB of the following paragraph. There's a new BBA, new paragraph BBA that has been formulated by the department and refined in consultation with the State Law Advisor. BBA reads as follows. The opening statements of Section 8 already say the minister, after consultation with the MEC, may make regulations relating to, now come to BBA, administrative or procedural matters necessary to enable public transport operators to obtain the required operating licenses. Another paragraph, G, by the insertion after subsection 1 of the following subsection. A new subsection 1A, which reads as follows, the regulations contemplated in subsection 1 BBA may differ in respect of different types of public transport or different categories of operators, and may include, but shall not be limited to, dash A, the imposition of a moratorium on applications for operating licenses or the issuing of such licenses for specified periods. B, the criteria that must be met or considered by the regulatory entities in order for such applications, for such applicants to qualify for operating license. This is the amendments proposed to Section 11, Section 8 of the Act that deals with regulations, and amendments are inserted to Clause 3 of the bill. And basically this captures what was presented by the department earlier in connection with the existing operations, the operating services, which are operating illegally in the country currently. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honourable members, there we are. Any taker? Should I give you 5 minutes to make a reflection? Mr. Patel, you are released. Is there anything you want to say before you leave? You're fine, you made
amendments. We are fine with the provisions.
Okay.
As read out by the State Law Advisor.
Okay. Honorable members, there we are. Are we fine?
No, Chair, the limitation is that members I can see next to me that don't have this gadget.
Oh.
They are looking all over the show for what has been read. And they are even reading the old document. They can't find what has been read. Now, I don't know how we deal with that. At least I open my gadget, I can see what is written there.
It's been taken care of. The copies will soon arrive. We just have to chop more trees so that we can bring more copies. I am comfortable.
No, Chair. If I am following the presentation, it's okay. We can live with this one. I think it's a lot of the attention has been paid to the concern that you've raised. The only those A, B, C were not A, B, and C, or the, was something about, or criteria is now number two. What was the third one? There was a third.
Regulation contemplation.
Just see what it is. Moratorium. And then, okay, they've shortened procedures.
Bongiwe, the question was from the honourable member is that you raised a few issues. He lost track. If you can repeat.
Oh no.
Can repeat what your question was for advocate to understand.
Now, I was just asking the chair, this Roman 2 on the departmental presentation had something to do with the shortened procedural issues, and then I don't see it here, and I just want to find out between them leaving and coming back is no longer there, what has changed.
It is covered under Roman Figure 1, where we indicated that the moratorium may provide for specified period. So it's covered already under 1, hence it is removed.
Yeah, Chair, I think I will be comfortable also. It's just have they then come with the Meikle, have they found the Meikle, it's just the Meikle road that they are presenting on us, because I think that's what we wanted, you know, as a matter of principle. So if it's a Meikle road and it's covered in the Principal Act, then I think I'm comfortable, but I would want to request that in future they should have caucus and come caucused here so that we won't have this situation. Because if they've caucused earlier on, then we're not going to have these problems that we have experienced. But I'm comfortable, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any dissenting voice? Honorable Ramatlakana has shown comfortability. Honorable Mpanza. I would say that it looks like they have reached the middle of the road, because we had to make sure that they go and caucus. Honorable Ramatlakane.
Okay, I'm not necessarily descending. I agree. I think there's an improvement on that. And then I think I should go back to the... There was another question that I asked in considering this provision. From the, can you just refresh our memory around the Principal Act, the provisions and enabling provisions around the issuing of operating permit? What does it read?
Who's taking, sir?
Thank you, Chair. Section 51 of the Principal Act says that any person who carries passengers for reward must hold an operating license or permit. So it was already covered. This meant that when Uber and the other companies started operating around 2011, they were required to apply for licenses, which a lot of them did. It was done under the category of charter services, a pre-arranged booked service. That's what it falls under at present. However, Chair, the feeling was that there was a need to regulate them more intensively, that hence the amendments that are in. And these special procedures, the regulations, will provide then in detail for assistance for not only the e-hailing services, but other operators who battled to obtain licenses to be able to do so. But we don't see a conflict with the Principal Act.
Can we now agree with the proposed amendments?
I think we agree with this refined amendment on. So I think it's I think we can work with it. I think we can agree with it.
I lost track. What was the question?
Chair, the question that I was asking the provision in the Principal Act that enables municipality to consider the application of anybody who comes through the e-hailing or through the Ubers, how they consider that application, given that the application currently is between A and B if you want the operating permit. So I think the department is saying they use a shuttle service, or do you call it a shuttle, or pre-booked shuttle provision to give a license or to provide people with an operating permit. So there's no problem with that provision. Now, it sounds to me that the municipality will have to apply their mind, or whoever that authority entity that is considering the application, whether that is actually what you say it is, because it's fairly wide issue what you're saying. But I think we could live with it if you say you are confident about it, sir. We will take your word for it. But in terms of the Act, when you have law, it must be specific so that at least you know what you are dealing with. This one is, she was improvised in terms of giving that license. But, Chair, in the interest of time, I think we should proceed with what we have and move on.
Okay, thank you very much, Advocate.
Chair, I don't want to upset the apple cart, but just for members' information, the way I have experienced it in practice and the way I've seen the legislation, Uber is not regulated. It is not formally regulated. There's no legislation that speaks on e-hailing. The department itself has two dissenting views on where to put Uber. In the past, they've issued, and I'll go to my house because that's where I have the copy of the letters from National Department. The first letter to the provincial entities, regulating entities, was put Uber under meter taxis. A few months later, when they couldn't get that right because the meter taxis required Uber to pay for an additional letter that they belonged to an association, then the department changed their mind, issued another letter, and say put them under charter services. So there is no formal regulation of e-hailing. That first statement that was made, I have to put my opinion in here because in practice there's no formal regulation. The provincial regulating entities then took both of those letters and wrote to the minister individually, Western Cape and Gauteng, to inform the minister how they will be dealing with attempting to at least regulate those e-hailing services in their provinces.
So it is an informal manner via the provincial regulating entities. That is why I think it's very important that we don't lose sight that this bill definitely meets all the regulations around e-hailing. And Mr. Ramatlakane's concern about what happens now in the period while they wait, they have complained on various occasions that according to them, the process should take 3 months, but it never does. So that other clause that was in the original copy from the state law advisor and the parliamentary legal advisor, to me, I was more comfortable with that.
Was that the clause which was put in time frames? Who's talking to matters? Okay.
Thanks, Chair. The reason in the bill, as it is, Chair, there are amendments to Section 66 of the Act to regulate Uber. I agree fully that they're not properly regulated at present. They need detailed regulations, which the bill provides for, and that will come, Chair. But at the moment, all I'm saying is that the Act always, even the previous Act and the previous one, said anybody who carries passengers for reward must have an operating license, previously a permit. So we agree that it's not ideal at present. That's why the bill provides for the minister to make regulations to regulate it.
Honourable Ramatlakane, Honourable Sibande.
No, Chair, you know, this has been the concern that it has been repeatedly raised, that what we're seeking to do with this bill is to try and get to a regulation. Now, you can't ask the minister to make law through regulation. What you have not in fact provided for in the legislation, you can't suddenly pick up in a regulation, because it's going to be illegal act. Well, how does the minister suddenly get powers now to make a regulation on something that was not in law? You can't. You must provide the minister with the power in the law in the specific terms. We're talking Uber here. I was asking, what is it that we are saying in the principal act to address this question? Because if it's not made a provision, we must also address the principal act, amend that section, so that there is a proper legislative amendment. The department hasn't provided us with anything around that particular issue specifically. That is why we've been arguing and we've been backwards and forward. What is this provision that is going to enable the minister to do something else? So, it's not throwing a stone in the wheel, advocate. Now, this is the task you must do, because that's your job, actually. So, I think we are in the middle of nowhere, frankly. We are in the middle of nowhere, with we accept all that provision that has been suggested, but insofar as the mandating act is concerned, I mean, in fudging this thing, I mean, chartered services, this is what we need to regulate. We need to regulate Uber, it's e-hailing. What are we saying in terms of regulating it? What is the provision? I said earlier on, what is it that municipality or entity will take into consideration when they are confronted with the application of Uber, for an example? What is it that must inform them to consider the application? Because at the moment, your key, sir, is AB. You are rank bound. And anything that is shuttle is a limit. They will tell you, we no longer need sufficient enough shuttling service license that we've issued on our list. We've got 25. We no longer need more than 25. There is no provision that is empowering the authority to consider an application in earnest. So I don't know how to move out of this. That is why I was asking state law advisor, but that's maybe a policy decision from the department, to say in the principal act, this is a section that we must put in that enables whatever you need to do in terms of regulations deriving from this provision. Is it difficult to ask? Or should we say, as a committee, in the event that the department is failing to do it, should we not just do it ourselves? Should we not just say to ourselves, we will now amend this particular section in the following way? And then the legal people will then take the dictionary and polish it up and make it read proper like proper English, but this is what we want to do. And we have repeated this. I think we just have to do it, because Dadum Konyani is no longer going to be coming here. He's running away. He's not going to be here to lead in this discussion. So I don't know, Chen. I'm suggesting that we stand this thing, this discussion down. We look at this provision. We have a proper documentation. We come here properly organized. This is a section that we're going to amend in terms of principal act. It's going to say ABC with respect to application, Uber, anybody who's on Uber, this is the what you need. Municipality must be clear, entity must be clear, you are considering this application as an e-hailing one, not as a shuttle or any other words that you are using. So I just think we just really stand down this thing and have a proper information.
Honorable Sibanda, Honorable Humsinga, Honorable, I thought it was you, Banza.
Chairperson, I'm a little bit worried here on what we're discussing. Chairperson, the reason is that I want to caution ourselves about this thing of Uber, meter taxi shuttles and the like. Because in terms of licensing, the question I'm asking myself, if I'm doing an introspection, whom do we license? Are we licensing individual, or are we licensing taxi association, or whatever? Because, you see, protect me, Chairperson. Because, Chairperson, my worry is that on the ground as we're speaking now, there were a lot of challenges whereby these people have started to fight each other, banning taxis, banning whatever. I will go back on what I've asked some time ago. Who is Uber? Why are we projecting it? Why are we promoting it? Because it seems that we are promoting it. I fully agree with Dr. Nell that Uber is not regulated. Because I can't remember whereby it's regulated. Also, going back on what was raised by my colleagues, that you can't make laws with regulations. Therefore, Chairperson, is that I wanted to appeal. Because yes, I agree with e-hailing, because e-hailing, that is something else, whereby even the associations, they can, apply for the thing which you use that system of e-hailing. But the Uber, who is Uber? Why are we promoting it? Why are we defending it while people are dying on the ground? Myself, I'm a little bit concerned about that one. Therefore, and also support the idea that let us wait for the proper documents to come and fall so that we can discuss about them.
Honorable members, the question at the center of our discussions, in terms of the principal bill, anybody who ferries people for a reward need to be given a permission to ferry those people. And in these instances, we meter, charter, we're not talking about that. We're talking about e-hailing, whether it's Taxify, whether it's Uber. The fact of the matter is now we're talking about the apps that are being used. which actually goes to what Honorable Ramatlakana was asking to say. Maybe what we need to do as a portfolio committee is to make a proposal of how we see this people who are ferrying commuters for a reward in such a way that it will be able to fit our understanding as a portfolio committee. That's how I understood you to be saying, Honorable Ramatlakana. And therefore, I think as we will be talking, let's think through as to how we would want to assist in terms of the amendment which will be able to include the applications that are there. Today we're talking about Uber and Taxify. Tomorrow we'll be talking about DKLA, the application, and so forth and so forth. So these are the things that we have to take cognizance of. Honorable Mpanza, Honorable Lumsinga.
Chair, as much as I hear the proposal of checking this thing and get the proper document, I think I would have a different view on that one. Maybe take your view, Chair. Let's find a way here because we have been dealing with this thing for many meetings. But. My concern is that, Chair, I would really want to hear from the team that went and caucused, because when they came back here, they said they've agreed. They said they've agreed that there is regulation, even Uber is regulated. That is why now we accepted the middle road that they were talking about. Now then, Dr. Nell then comes and say it's not regulated. Now then it becomes a problem, Chair, you see, because we rely on them as officials and as experts in their different fields. Now again, it means now we'll have now the caucus of the state law advisors, the department, and Dr. Nell going back now, caucusing, and then coming up with it can't work like that. So, Chair, I want to propose that let's find a proper amendment here. Let's not defer this thing to another meeting and get another document. It's only this error. And I think we can find a way and then resolve it. If it can't, then I can support the view of my colleagues that let's then defer it. That's my proposal, Chair.
In the meantime, you will be drafting the proposal so that when I finish with him, then you can give us the proposed amendment. Honorable Humsinga.
Thank you, Chair. I rather like the analysis which you offered, in that we have the Principal Act that allows people to enter into transporting people, and if it's for payment, then there are particular conditions around that. Next to that, we now have the introduction of a definition that specifies a particular field, specific area. My concern is, given those two elements, what happens if you still don't comply? Because the reality is that they are operating, and they are currently a big threat to the whole taxi environment. So what is the sanction? Should it be discovered that they didn't comply to what you presented as A and what you're now suggesting as component B? What will happen if they don't comply? There's absolutely a vacuum in that respect. Now, I want to question it to an even further extent. Given that we have what you currently propose, and we immediately apply this to the current situation, I maintain it wouldn't change anything. You would still have more Ubers, more Uber-like, and more other types of transportation ventures getting into. I don't think that the suggested legislation or the suggested thinking framework around regulation and control is watertight. I think it's the opposite. We don't have the perfect solution yet, and further thinking, to my meaning, is required on this. Giving the minister, passing it on to the minister, is duck and diving the issue. And I think we should be more specific and more focused on the current condition, and then evaluate what we suggest against what we currently have in the practical life.
There was a Gahwana me, I'll come to you. There was a proposal earlier on, I can't remember, which actually was specifying time frames from when to when. Which I believe probably we may want to consider that as we are dealing with the matter, because there was a document which was saying we need to give this process a time frame legally, so that when we register people who are ferrying people for a reward, when we now say we are legalizing the applications that are available, then we give them a time frame of registering as per the requirement of the National Land Transport Act, the principal act. That's what I'm throwing to yourself, to say you may need to consider bringing back that version of time frames within the law.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to clarify that as it stands, the amendment bill is not only empowering the minister to regulate on electronic e-hailing. There's a provision in Clause 38. In Clause 38, we are providing for the regulation of e-hailing, where we are giving detail in terms of the standard and the requirement of e-hailing. And also, we are going as far as also even indicating that type of e-hailing application, in terms of the identification and the distance and the fare. So presently, it's not like we are limiting to the minister to provide for the regulation. There is a provision already in Clause 38, where we are amending Section 66. And Section 66 deals with meter taxi. So that means the e-hailing application will be a subcategory of the meter taxi. So there is an empowering provision in the amendment bill. If the committee can also consider Clause 38.
Honorable Ramatlakana, Advocate Nell, you will be the last, then we can take a decision on our way forward. Or Honorable Mpanza will be giving us the proposed amendment that we feel we should do.
No, Chair, just Chair, my suggestion on this discussion, is the Section 38. We have it in amendment bill, that's Section 38. But the maybe let me just venture in this. You see, if you in NS wants to regulate the e-hailing services, you would have a clause in the principal act, not about taxis or whatever, meter taxis and sub is this, then you will say in that paragraph. The service that we are, you want to define it first. You want to define it, you already define it in e-hailing, you want to say, then the way in which they're going to obtain a permit to operate, they will meet this requirement. One, I'm making an example. It will be somebody who's going to apply, and the car in which vehicle that is going to be using is going to have to meet this particular requirement. Two, it's going to be accepted that these, they don't operate based on a rank-based permit. Therefore, they are not required to define the rank A and B. They would specify the new provision is going to be that their service is individually based on the call they received using the app, and therefore it's going to fall within the parameters of radius permit, if you like. It's going to be regarded as a radius permit, and therefore they are going to be, now I don't know the distances, whether it's going to be 35 kilometers radius permit, that's what you say. So you're saying this is because you also need to guard against Johannesburg, Cape Town, right? You will say you are given this permission to operate and your parameters operation is going to be 50 kilometers. It means you can only go as far as Khayelitsha, you can't go beyond that and then you come back. And the Khayelitsha one, they will go to Strand and they can strand and come. So you give a kind defined radius permit which is in compliance with what you call e-hailing or whatever you call it, and then anybody, when the municipality or entity receive an application, they will then be guided by that in the legislation, and they will then say this is what we now have to consider and give a permit based on this. That's now in your principal act, if you like, in the act, because remember we are amending the current act. What you are amending section 38 is not giving you the power to give or consider the applications, the license that you're applying for. You're talking about something else. So all you need is that paragraph in the principal act. It could be well be what I think Advocate Nell spoke to us about, what Gauteng did and what the Western Cape did in terms of making sure that there is at least holding arrangement. You could then say that holding arrangement is going to legalize the holding arrangement, is going to henceforth become a law. We're going to put it in the principal act under that section that defines what it is and the functionality of it. And in that way, when the minister makes regulation, then makes regulation informed by a radius permit of 30 to 35 kilometers coming out of a principal act around the categories of vehicles, what they need, and South Africans and non-South Africans in this field. So I think we're talking across purposes. You are responding on something, but we are not quite on the same issue. So the issue that we want you to help us with, that's why I was asking, tell me the provision in the principal act that empowers you to do this. You then say shuttle. It's not shuttle. This is not a shuttling. It's a service that you are going to regulate, and you understand this is individual based by a call. So that's all, Chair, my understanding that we need. I agree with the Honorable Msimi. So we will come up with this act. It's going to be a bad act because it doesn't have the foundation for it to be funded. The municipality is going to use their discretion, and they will decline all of those permits. Even if you're giving them 120 days in this transitional arrangement, it means nothing. Because in transitional base, 90 days, on what basis? What is it that must be considered for license to be granted? So it's really just it's words. That means zero in action. So I think let's come to real life. Let's just come to real life. Let's just deal with this issue the way it's supposed to be dealing with. Am I right? If I'm right, let's go and work out the people, work out the paragraph and put the paragraph that in the act, that's what is going to be the informing. That's going to be empowering the minister to do anything. That's going to help the municipality, the licensing authority, to understand that it's not a route-based permit that they're talking about here. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ramatlakana, Honorable Humsinga, then Alma, then, Department, and we should, you also want to speak? You'll talk after Honorable Humsinga.
So just to link on to what my colleague, Honorable Ramatlakana, just said, even in looking at the proposed time frame, the sort of phasing in process, where is the tie down? Where do you lock whoever or whatever in terms of a vehicle registration number, in terms of an ID, in terms of both of those? I know we're talking maybe on regulation or regulation level, but what prohibits a person of rotating five vehicles or five people and still staying in business, in essence not succeeding in getting them in line, getting them registered and regulated? I again maintain that it's not watertight.
Yeah, I think Chair, Arunsuma is correct. The issue of registering a car is very much important, because the way Uber operates, it's a very different kind of a system. But also the issue of parameters, how far do they work, is a very serious challenge as well. Because you may find a person who's registered with Uber. If ever, let's say for an example, I've registered with Uber in Johannesburg. When I arrive here, because what they do, they log in into the system to check who's nearby. And if I say I'm nearby, but my operation license that I'm working in Pretoria, but I can still work in here in Cape Town, that's just I'm depriving other people the opportunity to work. I mean, it's something that must be able to be at least be stipulated clearly in the act, because it will be able to assist to defend all those unwanted behaviors. I think we must be able to come up with specifications in terms of these matters, so that at least we come clear in terms of how are they going to operate, because the operation of meter checks is different than a for example, the meter checks that are working here in town, you won't find them working in Belleville. That's a fact. They work here in town. They don't go in Belleville. How do you segment all those things? Thanks.
Thank you, Alma.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Ramatlakane was spot on with his proposal, and I've made your points to both the department and our parliamentary legal advisors. The concern that Mr. Radebe posed actually occurs. Uber drivers or e-hailing drivers from Joburg will go on to holiday over December period in Durban, and then when the rates spike, they log on and they ferry people in Durban. This was also one of the points I pointed out to Nolotana. Now, you might have a situation where the person wants to operate in Joburg, and then they get the permission from Johannesburg Metro to operate within a radius, and then they want to go and drop that person off in Pretoria. Now, in giving the permission for Johannesburg, for him to operate there, they might have looked at their public transport network plans and said, okay, it's fine, we can allow you to operate, but where he wants to operate in Pretoria might not be the same situation. That is where Uber has this fluid model that allows them to go anywhere. They can go from A to B, drop person off, pick person up at B, go to C, and then go back to A, where some of your charter services are not allowed to do that. They'll go from A to B and they must come back empty. Meter taxis, they have a radius imposed on them But that is also an internal arrangement that they've made, also allowing for the ranking. You'll see in the Principal Act with the meter taxis, they have a specific addition there to say that they may stand for higher at a rank. That Uber doesn't necessarily have that, so what do? They stand by the nearest petrol station near the airport. And that's where a lot of the conflicts also come in with the meter taxis, because they know this. It might also not be the safest place for the petrol station attendants or those services that are there. But I think there might be a proposal that instead of pushing e-hailing under meter taxi services, we note that it's very much the same. And they even brought in the presentations, they said, we don't actually want to be with meter taxis. The meter taxis also don't actually want them there. Do a separate clause, just separating e-hailing, and cover all these concerns of e-hailing, so that you don't have to cross-reference the whole time. That might also alleviate the concern and clarity with Gauteng regulating entity doing it different to Western Cape. It might give the regulating entities peace of mind as well, and when they know exactly where to put these applications, the processing of the application might also go faster. So then they don't need this 3-month, 6-month waiting period that they're applying at the moment. But it is very true, Mr. Hansinger, and what the department also said. Section 50 requires them to have an operating license regardless. My only concern that we might have, a nagging point, it depends on how our national system allows you to apply for and how many operating licenses you can have on one vehicle. Because what happens with e-hailing, the guys that work on e-hailing are not necessarily only e-hailing services. It might be a meter taxi guy that comes off duty on his meter taxi linked license, but then he wants to operate with that meter taxi license on e-hailing services. That is one of their draw cards to get them in quicker so that they don't have to apply for a separate new operating license. So the concern is, I'm not sure if the regulating entity's electronic system that's linked with National allows you to have two types of operating licenses. If that's not the case, we might have to then have the time frame that would allow those people that are with Uber but on a separate operating license that want the e-hailing license specifically to then have that period to go over, because the Act says if you have a permit, your permit remains valid within that year frame that we had, 2016-2018, but we've now also extended it for 7 years according to our amendments, that remains valid until they get an operating license. So we might have a situation with those guys that have now gotten permission, but are actually they're on a different kind of operating license. So the practical aspects are very important.
Thanks, Chair. I think we're hearing the committee loud and clear, Chair, that, as was said, Uber wanted e-hailing to be a separate category of services. The department's feeling was it should be a subcategory of meter taxis, but I think the committee feels strongly that it should be a separate category. I'd just like to mention, Chair, that these issues that have been raised are basically all covered. Section 51 of the Act says only one operating license per vehicle. So if the Uber driver wants to jump to another vehicle, we'll need to apply for a new operating license. Also, Section 57.4 says that when you apply for a license, the regulatory entity can impose conditions, and these conditions can include that you may only operate in this city or whatever. But, Chair, I think the feeling, if we're reading it, clearly is that we want a nice separate section, a separate category, so that these things are clearer.
Chairperson, I don't want to go back. Comrade Ramatlakane made a suggestion earlier on. I don't know where does it come, whereby other people are still feeling that we must make a separate category for Uber. Why Uber? Because you see, Chairperson, my one is...
Remember, let me just cut you off there. When the issue was being discussed, it's not Uber. It's any application. E-hailing.
it's e-hailing, and the honorable members have agreed that we're going to have a portion which will be able to deal with e-hailing. We're not dealing with Uber here. We're dealing with e-hailing. Will be the final. If you don't come with your head of the unit, public transport, don't come. If you don't come with the head of public transport, don't come. DDG public transport must be here. Because we can't continue working backwards and forward on this matter, because for the past, this is the fifth meeting that we're talking to issues e-hailing, and we can't move forward because probably we're not properly understood what exactly once we want to see happen. Honorable Ramatlakane, do you want to fill in what we are making as a proposal so that when the department leaves here, leaves with a proper understanding?
I thought that they captured it. I saw them taking copious notes. They now have it. They will crack it, I think. And I think
when they leave here, the notes remains here.
But Chair, they could phone us if they want. They are in doubt. They could phone you if they are in doubt. We'll give them on telephone conversation what they actually want. But I think what they understand is that they must be separate. Separate this thing, define it, get a paragraph that says, in considering an application, this is what is going to inform the applications by those authorities that are considering applications. So that will then be carried over into the regulations where you want to detail it. So I think it's straightforward.
You want to say something?
To repeat again, please, can you repeat?
I didn't write anything, I forgot what I said, but...
That is why I was saying, you need to repeat so that it can stick in their brains and they will be able to read their notes with what is stuck in here.
Yeah, Chair, what the discussion was around is that they will take the Principal Act. I've just had a look at the Principal Act in Section 66. It does not speak to this issue. So you're going to take that. You're going to create a separate clause. You're going to name it whatever you name it. That's going to define the e-hailing services that are going to be provided. And then you're going to say in the application of these services, you are going to take into account that this is not a route-based permit, it's rather a radius permit. So the application is going to be based on the radius. Whether it's 35 kilometers or 40 kilometers, I'm not going to get into that, but you understand what it is. So it means that there is a distance measure. And then you're going to then say, then from there you're going to carry it over into the regulations about the more detailed regulations around it, but you've got to make sure that the Principal Act speaks to that issue. So that's really what I was saying. Those are kind of three things. The vehicles, the rest is going to be compliances. What are the compliances? Compliance is going to be more or less the same as a meter taxi. Vehicle will have to be a roadworthy vehicle, this type of vehicles, and.
You got it. Next week when you come here, I'll be a very nasty person, to say the least. We have really tolerated. Honorable members, we are going into the next agenda item. Honorable members, we are going into the next agenda item.
have any